Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. At Finstrat, we provide CFO-led accounting, finance, and reporting services to assist clients monetize their business. Stick around to the end of the podcast, and I'll share how you can be our next guest. Now, on to the show. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. With us today, we have Yehuda Niv. Yehuda is the founder and CEO at Spines. Yehuda, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Christian. Nice to be here.
Pleasure to have you. So let's start with Spines. What problem is it solving in the market?
So Spines, we are an AI-powered publishing platform. And what we are doing is we empower authors with the power of AI. So we take the whole publishing process that used to cost tens of thousands of dollars and takes about 6 to 18 months on average. And we made it possible to publish a book within 3 weeks instead of 6 to 18 months. And the production costs reduced to somewhere between $1,200 to $5,000. That depends of how much of a service the author would like to get from the tool. And we've been able to already, when it's recorded, to publish 3,700 American authors. And we are growing very, very fast for the past 2 years, more than 10x year-over-year growth. So we are here to help authors to make their publishing dream a reality in the most easy and cost-effective way. And of course, meet the audience faster. So that's what Spines is all about. I can break it down to a lot of things that we are doing within the publishing space, but that's the kind of bigger vision.
Great. And is it predominantly digital, or are you doing physical books as well?
So we create three different versions of the same book. So a digital version, a print on demand version, and also audiobook version, which we can use one of our 60 synthetic voices, or we can use the author's own voice to create his own book, you know? So instead of the author going for, let's say, 40 hours into a studio to create his audiobook version, we can do that after having 3 minutes of his voice. We create his own model and we generate the audiobook. And for authors, that's a huge opportunity because about 40% of book consumption nowadays is voice, audiobooks. However, most of the authors don't have the budget to create an audiobook version for their own book. So with AI, we can actually empower them and helping them to meet more audience. And we can also do it in several languages, so not only in English. So let's say you've published your book in English, and now you want it to be translated to 5 more languages, let's say Spanish, French, and much more. We can do that with our tools. We can translate your book with AI. Then a human being will go over the translation, make sure it's accurate enough, and then we can create a digital print on demand and audiobook version on those languages, so we can double the audience of each author. Instead of him aiming for only one reader's market, we can make him global, you know? So it's a global opportunity for American authors.
Wow, that's amazing. And as I'm listening to it, I'm just saying, oh, that makes total sense. Out of curiosity, you reference American authors. Why the focus on the US? Is it just because of the TAM, or are there any other reasons?
So in the States, there are 2.5 million titles published annually. It's only second to China. Oh. I don't know Chinese, and I'm not planning on knowing. So working with Americans, I love the States. I visit a lot. Spending a lot of time in New York and Florida. So for me, it makes sense. And actually, you know, I started my journey as an Israeli publisher about 13 years ago. I published a book when I was halfway throughout my master's degree at electronics engineering. And I bootstrapped my own publishing house in Israel. I wasn't that clever about the name. I named it Niv Publishing after my last name. It started in my dorm room, but it grew to become the largest publishing house in Israel. And in Israel, we publish about 1,200 titles a year, which the whole Israeli industry is 7,000 titles a year. Okay, so we are very, very big in Israel. And for me to go from a 7 titles a year industry to 2.5 million titles a year industry, for me, like it's for me, it's an infinite opportunity, you know, like so many authors that we can help. And also because our approach to publishing, what we're doing, we're actually lowering the barrier of who can afford himself to become a published author. So I believe there are about 10 million titles that are not being published every year because of the process being so expensive, so inefficient. And with Spines, we can actually enable more market and allow more people to leave their legacy, to share their story, build their personal brand with a book. So I understand the industry very well. I understand the American mentality very well, and for me, it's a huge opportunity. So this is why I decided to enter the American market. But eventually, Spines will not only translate book to more languages, but actually operate eventually on a global scale. That's my end game. That's my vision, you know.
It. So let's. I was going to ask. So you read my mind. I was going to ask what was the career progression leading up to the launch of Spines. It sounds like it was school, then Niv Publishing. What was?
Yes.
Can you give us a maybe a 30,000 foot overview of what the experience was like building a traditional publishing company?
So, you know, when I started about 13 years ago, when I published my first book, I realized that the publishing process is broken. And I was amazed, like how it's possible that those publisher operates in such broken way. And as an engineer, I realized, okay, I could improve so many processes. So I decided to give it a shot. I knew nothing about business, so I found myself a very good mentor. His name is Alon Werber. He used to be the CEO of Pixalot. It's one of the largest sport tech companies, and he actually taught me everything about business. And I integrated his lessons, and I started hiring more team members. And eventually, Niv Publishing grew to become more than 400 team members.
Wow.
So it's a huge team, and I was able to find more mentors to the journey. One of my mentors back in the day was Ariel Pinto. He was the CEO of Mercedes Israel, and what he told me how to do is, how can I build a business that I'm not required in? So I always having this in my back of my mind, like the way to test the business. I call it the bus test. That means if tomorrow you're hit by a bus, what happened to your business? Okay, so I realized, okay, for this business to keep helping authors, I need to find a way for that to operate without me. So I learned how to do that, and eventually I hired a very strong CEO to run Niv Publishing for me. That was about 5 years ago, and finally I felt like I'm getting my life back, you know. So because building a business, a bootstrap business, I wasn't backed by VCs back in the day, okay? So it's a very different a challenge, and I had to learn as I grow. But eventually I was able to actually see this company keeping on growing without me. And since then, like the company grew a lot, and I actually use the capital I've created there to invest as an angel in startups. And that's how I discovered AI. You know, I realized what those tech founders are working on. and I realized, okay, AI will probably revolutionize everything. That was 2 years before ChatGPT released. Okay. So I understood there is a huge thing coming. I kind of foresaw it, and I realized that I have only two different options. Either I will become irrelevant by it, like everyone else, or I could be the crazy guy who lead this opportunity in the world. So I decided to start another company. I named it at the beginning, the name was Books AI, another clever name, Books and AI, of course. eventually, we changed that to Spines, and started with my own with my own capital. Soon, I realized my capital would never be enough, so I raised $1.3 million from angel investors. That was the pre-seed round. And then we launched a kind of product. You know, it was very, very mature, but it worked. And with that proof of concept, I raised a seed round of $5.2 million. I announced it as a 6.5 because I wanted to get into TechCrunch. I combined the pre-seed and the seed together, but eventually TechCrunch did not cover us. So, but I tried, you know. The round was led by Aleph. It's a top tier VC in Israel. The partner is Michael Eisenberg. Also joined the round, Dan Senior, the Startup Nation author, and also the investment bank Liontree of Arya Bukrov. And then we kept on growing. And eventually, 8 months ago, we had a Series A of $16 million, led by Oren Zeev. He's one of the top tier investors in the Silicon Valley. And for me, it's a great opportunity to work with such an amazing investors. A funny story: the first time Michael Eisenberg and Oren Zeev met in person was in my board meeting. You know, so it's a, so it's a. And so we've been able to grow very fast, more than 10x year-over-year growth for 2 consecutive years. Now it's the third year, and it's a crazy journey for me, you know, building a bootstrap company, but now building a VC-backed company. It's a whole different journey, and the only reason I've been able to do that is because I have great mentors. And lot of connection within the ecosystem of founders. You know, sometimes small advice can save you tons of mistakes. So for me, that's a discovery journey, but
Sure.
also a very, very enjoying journey, but also a very challenging journey, you know. But being a founder, that's when you choose the challenge. You don't run away from the challenge, you're going into the challenge. And the whole mission behind that is, back in the day, one of my mentors asked me, like, how could you help a billion people? How could you improve the life of a billion people? And I struggled with that question, and I realized, okay, on average, every book will probably be read by 1,000 people. So if I will be able to publish a million authors, I could help a billion people. So, but back in the day, it was impossible for one person to be responsible to publish million authors. But now, by empower authors with the power of AI, it's actually possible. This is the greatest opportunity of our generation. How can I use this advantage, this technological advantage, to help more authors to share more stories? And I believe the only reason we actually know what happened on planet Earth about, let's say, 3,000 years ago is because people actually wrote about it. And the only reason we know what happened on this time is because we are writing books about it. Because, you know, all this, I don't know, social media, digital space, who knows if those internet service will survive? But printed copies will. Okay. And back in the day, people were only writing on, you know, the generals, the kings, because the common men probably couldn't know how to read or write. But nowadays, on the Western world, most of people know how to read and write, and publishing a book, that's the best way to leave a legacy, to share a story, to share a vision, And actually, a book can outlive the author. So, you can read book 100 years after the author has passed away. So for me, being able with Spines eventually to publish million authors and help a billion people by doing that, and those books can probably share the story of the humanity into future generations. So for me, it's a vision, so.
Well, congratulations on your success.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
It's really exciting. So I hear a couple of things I'd love to just get your perspective on.
Sure.
And so there was this transition when you were investing between NIV and Spines. And one of the things I can't help but think about is that Spines is successful today is because you have domain expertise.
Of course.
And so when you're angel investing, how critical is it for you that your founders that you're investing in have domain expertise?
So I strongly believe in that. I think that founder market fit in today's industry, in today's, because things move so fast, okay? Like learning an industry, it's a curve and it takes time. But if you come with a domain expertise and you're trying to build a business in the fields that you've been operating for the past decade, so you don't need to have that learning curve, like you already know the gaps, you know what's broken, you know the opportunity, you know the people, you know the talent, so everything is much more faster. And I think that's a huge advantage. Okay. I always give the example that I wouldn't give the name, but there is another AI-based publishing platform that had a seed round of $4 million a year and a half ago, and they didn't launch a product yet, not even a first version, because it's very complicated to take a publishing process, okay, and turn that into a platform. It's the only reason I've been able to do that is because the team and I, we've been working together building Niv Publishing, and then I took like the brightest mind and moved them with me to Spines, and now we integrated all our know-how and all our technological understanding of AI into creating our tools and understanding all the nuance of the publishing process. That's a crucial thing, and because publishing a book, that's not a simple task, and we've been able to do that because me and the team, we come from the founding team, we come from over a decade of experience in that specific domain. And I think my investors love that, and that's why I was able eventually to raise top tier money and actually make it happen. One of the things Oren Zev told me, because I've been communicating with him for over 2 years before he decided to invest in me, and he told me, like, 2 years ago, you kind of told me what you are planning on doing. 2 years after, it actually works, They told me I invest in founders, so he decided to lead the round. And I think the product market fit, it's one challenge, but product market fit become easy challenge if you have before that a founder market fit, So I think it's a huge advantage for founders to grow in a specific industry to build amazing products in those industries. So yes, for your question, I strongly believe in that.
So it's great to hear, and I agree. And is it safe to say though you would agree too that there will be instances like, hey, artificial intelligence is new. You can't always be expected to have domain expertise in everything, and I just know though that I have to learn it or surround myself with people who do.
Yes. So also, if you don't have expertise in that domain, make sure the people you hire does. Like hire the right talent who come from experience, or have a co-founders that actually grew in the industry. Because every lesson is expensive. If you're going in a certain direction and that's the wrong direction, and you don't know that because you don't come from the industry, making a U-turn will be very expensive. So eventually, a company dies when the money runs out. So being able to keep raising capital, you need to show progress in revenues all the time. And for that, you need to figure out your product market fit very fast. And for that, you need to actually understand the industry you're operating in. So if it doesn't come from the CEO, it must come from his partners or his team members or his advisors or his investors. But someone need to understand what's going on in that industry.
I mean, it makes really good sense. Yeah, and if someone, I don't know who gets credit, but I remember reading a long time ago something to the effect of all businesses go out of business for the same reason. They run out of money. So yes, couldn't agree more. And surrounding yourselves with,
You as a CFO probably know that.
say it again.
So, because your business is in the CFO space, you probably know that. So.
Fortunately, for the most part, it's a rare occurrence where we have to remind them that that's the case. But yes, it does happen. So, one of the impressions you're leaving me with is you have a tremendous amount of conviction. You've made m multiple references to a vision, and I think for good reason. I'd be really curious to hear, though, what the dynamic is like for someone who has a strong opinion of where things should go and how they should play out. But when you hear dissenting opinions from some pretty experienced investors or mentors, how do you normally process that?
So I strongly believe in feedback, and I always say that the things I don't know are much important than the things I know. Okay, so if someone give me a different opinion, I listen, and I start to dig into that and see, am I missing something? Okay. And however, it's okay to have different opinions, okay? And making a choice on based on your opinion, based on your vision, based on what you believe eventually will work, even though you're hearing other opinions from very smart people. Okay. So having this inner call, I call that, it's a very important thing to a founder. Because there is a lot of noise, okay? For everything, there are many opinions, and you need to understand what is your inner call. Sometimes your inner call will mislead you, but that's part of the journey. There is something there you need to learn, okay? And but you need to learn fast, because in startups, you have no time to dig into a mistakes multiple times. Like, okay, you learned it, move away fast and improve. So having on board smart people who guide you through, who give their experiences as advices, that's amazing. But eventually, as a CEO, you will always hear different opinions from a very smart people, and you will need to choose what you think is the best way. And even sometimes in a board meeting, one board member say one thing, the other board members say the opposite, but you as a CEO need to choose. And eventually the whole company need to move in the direction that the CEO has chosen. And it's okay to make mistakes, but if it's a mistake, learn quick, like realize that it was the wrong direction, and it's okay to say to everyone that that was a mistake, and let's switch direction, okay? Because as I said, the things we don't know are much important than the things we know, And the only way to know if something is right or wrong is to actually try it. Yeah.
100% agreed. I think a lot of times, well, we're always going to operate, or most of the time, we're going to operate with an absence of exactly knowing what's going on. I think once you recognize that, it's easier to say, okay, well, let me make a calculated decision, and if I'm wrong, let me address it quickly. I 100% agree. I'm curious. You referenced intercom. Are there any tactics or you've adopted and employ over the years to keep you centered? As you point out, there's a lot of noise.
Yeah.
Young companies move really fast. Anything you can pass along to the audience you find really works well to keep you grounded?
I believe meditation is a crucial tool for every founder who is in a very fast evolving situation. Because, as you said, there is a lot of noise, okay? And you need to find the signal within the noise. And meditate every morning. It helps to reduce the thought frequency. Okay, so throughout the day, people have somewhere between 60 to 90,000 thoughts in one day, and every thought is very, very quick. So when you practice meditation, you actually lowering that frequency. And then you can actually find the gap between each idea, and I believe that the signal comes in the gaps. Like this is where you find what is right and what is wrong, and what you should and what you shouldn't do. But that's what works for me. There are those people who will say that it's a total nonsense, and that's also okay. Okay. But for me, to clear my mind, to be more focused, to neutralize the noise, to find the signal, to understand the message and what I should do, for me, it's very helpful to meditate, to lower the pace. And then I also go to the day much more focused, with less noise, with a clear idea of what I want to accomplish today. And I've been able to be much more productive the day I meditate versus the day I'm done, So you can think that the meditation might be a waste of time, okay? But you can sacrifice, let's say, 10 to 20 minutes in the morning to having the rest of the day much more productive. So it's so for me, to meditate, it's a productive thing because it makes me more productive throughout the day. But that's what works for me. Everyone can find it. By the way, meditation, it's not only meditate. It could be practice. It could be going for a run. It could be going for a swim. Okay, anything that you can do that shut the mind. So.
So I know we're an N of two, but for the benefit of our audience, I can share that I agree with you 100%. Just as a data point, for the last 10 years, pretty consistently between 5 and 60 minutes every morning, first thing.
Amazing.
And it 100% works. I would tell you one of the things, just again, for maybe give our audience a teaser. I agree. I f find that ideas come a lot more easier and good ones. I find emotions kind of dial back and I can see things more clearly. And I also find that it kind of puts my ego in check. It's a lot easier to take responsibility and a lot easier to give other people on the team credit and kudos and patience and understanding. So yes, I think you're spot on. Well, again, my experience, but I agree. My experience validates yours.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So we talked about a bunch of financing rounds for Spines. Can you share
Yes.
with our audience a little bit what that experience was like? I heard at least one set of conversations that was taking place 2 years out. But any insights you can give on how it went down and what you learned and maybe what you would have done different?
So fundraising, that's something that you are getting better on, because when I just started fundraising, I had no idea what I'm doing, okay? And it took me a while to understand what angel investors want to hear, okay? And then raising the seed round from a VC, that was a whole different approach, because now you are not trying to sell to small investors. You're trying to sell to a top tier VC, so it's a different conversation. So that's a different skill, okay? Then raising early growth round, that's a different conversation. And probably when I will start working on my Series B, it will be a whole different conversation. So I think that the best advice is to have conversations with other funders who fundraised recently, similar round, okay? Because the VC space is constantly changing. Valuation going up and down, ticket size might go crazy or shrink down, okay? It depends of what's going on in the industry. And if someone raised is a Series B 2 years ago, and I'm trying to work on a Series B 6 months from now, probably getting his advice won't help me a lot, because things has changed, okay? So finding founders that secured similar round in a similar stage in a similar company, and asking for their advice is probably the best idea. And also a focus on positioning yourself, okay? So what happened is I remember that raising the seed round was a hustle. I actually worked hard on that, but raising the Series A was very fast and easy, because I positioned myself as a category-defining company who has already raised from top-tier VC, who is growing very fast, who is getting recognized in all different places. And people start talking about this, and actually I start to get inbounds from top tier VCs, and it's very different when you're trying to get introduced or when they inbound to you, and now you're actually on a different position. So position yourself as a category leader is probably the best advice. It's easy said than done, okay? But if you were able to do so I can tell you that now in the pipeline, I have about 20 top tier VCs that are very interested in leading our Series B, okay? And eventually I will have to choose one of them. So being in a stage, actually, I'm privileged enough that I will be able to choose my leader investor in future rounds. That's something that I had to build, okay? Because when I started fundraising, no one wanted to talk with me, okay? But now I'm in a position that top tier investors reach out to me. So it's a journey, okay? And eventually you will become good at this. No one teach you how to do that. It's a trial and error journey. And another great advice is to is before every meeting, go to the website of that specific VC, or ask ChatGPT, okay? Because there is a difference between what VC says they are all about than what they're actually doing. Okay? And you can see what they're actually doing based on their portfolio. You can go into website, see what they're actually investing in, and maybe you will figure out that meeting is a waste of time. Maybe you will figure out, okay, they never in for me, let's say, okay, let's say they never invested in a B2C company in the stage that I'm raising. Okay, so why I'm having a call with them. Okay,
Sure.
so it's a very important to save your energy and time. Okay, and not focus on those who are irrelevant to you. So I think.
Do you have recommendations for founder networks for entrepreneurs who are getting ready for their first pre-seed to talk with and get a sense of what the current landscape looks like?
Yes. So let's say you want to have a pre-seed round. So find founders who had their pre-seed round in the last 6 months and start to ask them how their deck looked like, who they reached out to, why they reached out to these investors, why those investors tell them not. Okay, because getting a no, it's, by the way, one thing that I did. At the beginning, I will start getting a lot of no's and I didn't know why. So I started to ask, okay, there is no investing on the table. You will not invest. Okay, you told me no, that's fine. Could you meet me again for a coffee and explain me why not?
Sure.
Okay.
Great advice.
I learned so much from those meetings. Okay. I learned all the gaps in my story, because fundraising. It's an ability of storytelling. There is a $1 million story, there is a $20 million story, there is, I always say, if your last name wow, I forgot his name. How could I forget his name? If your last name is Rappaport, there is a $32 billion story. Okay, so everything is a story. So you need to perfect your story and your storytelling abilities and to know how to answer the right question and to actually have a very good answer for every question you've been asked. And one of the most important thing is, let's say you have a same reason why investors tell you no and it's repeat itself. So you have to figure out a good answer for that. And actually solve that in the 10 minutes, the first 10 minutes of the meeting. Okay. So like for me, the highest problem was that no investor understand the publishing industry. Okay. There are no startups in publishing. I'm the first. Okay. So when I told them that it's a $35 billion industry, they didn't believe me. So then I figure out a very good way to explain the publishing industry very, very, very early in the meeting, so that won't be a problem in future stages. Okay, so finding the major problems you have after the meeting and solve them in the beginning of the meeting. Okay, so and having a very good answer to that. Okay, so. I had like a, let's say, 5 minute pitch of the publishing industry that after that, the person standing before me could understand the publishing industry good enough to actually make a decision and understand the opportunity. Okay. But it took me a while to develop that story. So eventually it's a storytelling ability.
I think it's great advice. I love the idea of understanding where the disconnect was and just asking, because it's 100% of the shots you don't take. And so, and then knowing is you're better informed for the next meeting. Yehuda, I've genuinely enjoyed this podcast. I've learned a ton. Before we wrap up, a little bit of a retrospective. If you had a chance to go back, have a conversation with your younger self, what would you share?
Most of the things you learned in school are wrong. I think that the journey ahead of me is to realize that most of the things are wrong and to learn the truth about the things. And if I could know things sooner, probably my journey was quicker and easier. And that's something that I will eventually, when I will have kids, I will try to save them that kind of learning and actually tell them how things really work in the world. It's very different than what they want us to think, okay? And the quicker we realize the truth and how things are going on, the more impact we can have on the planet and help more people and create great companies. And but that's also requires a lot of courage to actually being able to say a lot of things that I thought that are true are wrong, okay? And it takes a while. It took me too much, okay? But eventually I got it.
We could probably devote a podcast to the next question, but I'm just wondering, because what you just said, I'm going to ask. I heard you loud and clear that Niv Publishing came out of your university days, but if you had to do it over again, do you think you would have gone to college?
So I think every step of my journey was accurate to me. Like I had to go through those stages to get what I am today. I strongly believe that learning a master's degree at electronics engineering was kind of a waste of time. But it was very interesting, and I really enjoyed it. And I learned a lot of let's say thinking abilities that helped me in the future. So eventually it did help. But I think that when we are younger, we have a lot of life energy. And using that life energy to getting a degree, I think it's the wrong use of that energy. And using that energy to create amazing companies, I think it's much more suitable use for the youth energy.
I think it's, well, thank you for being honest and candid. I agree. I mean, why not go get your master's when you're in your 50s or 60s?
Yes.
Yehuda, before we wrap up, anyone in your personal professional network who's had a positive, meaningful impact on you that you'd like to recognize?
So I think my first mentor, Alon Werber, Pixelot, it's probably his sixth company. Okay. He has seen a lot. Okay. Like, and even a few days ago, I had a call with him with few questions. I think his guidance throughout the years has helped me a lot, and got me to where I am today. I always say something funny. He has three kids. They all say I'm the favorable child. So. Okay, so I think that something that every listener can take from this podcast is to find good mentors, people who can actually inspire you, and their life is a life you want to experience as well, and learn from them.
Fantastic. If there are any members of our audience who'd like to learn more about spines or just get in touch with you, how can they find you?
Spines.com, it's our website. The domain cost me $70,000, so use that. You can find me on LinkedIn, Yehuda Niv. You can also find my Hebrew Instagram, Yehuda Niv. A lot of content there, but it's in Hebrew. Soon I will start uploading more stuff in English.
Fantastic. Well, it sounds like there's an opportunity to translate that as well.
With AI, of course.
Of course. Yehuda, thank you so much. I genuinely appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you, Kristen. It was amazing.
Again, for the benefit of our audience, Yehuda Niv, founder and CEO of Spines. And again, I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of FinStrat Management. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. Take care. Christian Marquez here. Thank you so much for listening to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. If you're a successful founder or an investor, would like to be on the podcast, please visit podcast.finstratmgmt.com /podcast-guest. If you've got something out of this interview, please share this episode on social media. If you know someone that would be a great guest, please tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag Innovators and Investors. I'd love to see your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you catch each new episode, please subscribe to the Innovators and Investors podcast. And your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. Would you like to know more? Go to our website, finstratmgmt.com, or follow us on LinkedIn or on X. Our handle is @finstratmgmt. This is Christian Marquez. Thank you for listening. Until next time.